Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Troubleshooting WebSphere Application Adapters. Today's presenters are Damu Fuluswamy and Pratni Beyagu. Damu has been working in WebSphere support for the past 5 years and the last 3 years in WebSphere adapter support. Prior to joining WebSphere support, he worked on the development of ERP and CRM applications. He is a certified Siebel consultant and an IBM certified support professional. Pratni has been working with the WebSphere adapters technical support team for the past 6 years. In her current role, she is responsible for assisting clients worldwide with solving adapter-related issues. She also works closely with the development team in order to improve the product quality and to ensure client satisfaction. At this point in time, I would like to pass the presentation over to Pratni.
Thanks, Joseph. Hi, everyone, and I'm Pratni, and I would like to thank you all for joining us for today's presentation, Troubleshooting WebSphere Application Adapters. So before I start off with my presentation, I just wanted to let you know that these WSCE sessions are a great opportunity for us to interact with our clients, share the information and the expertise that we gain working with our product. So we want to make the sessions as beneficial as possible. So for that reason, we'll need your help on that end. So what we would like need is basically we want to hear from you on if there are any additional topics that of interest that you want us to cover. So please do let us know either at the end of the session or also we are available on Twitter as well as the Developer Works Adaptive Forums. So please do provide us with this feedback so that we can include them in our future sessions. So with no further ado, let's go ahead and start the presentation. Joseph, let's move on to slide number 2. Slide number 2 covers the agenda for today's presentation. So me and Damu would like to basically cover the commonly reported issues and problems that we have seen recently with the application adapters and focusing more on the SAP Siebel, PeopleSoft, and JD Edwards. At the end, we'll have a Q&A session, but along the way, we'll also try to cover some of the debugging information and troubleshooting tips and hints that will assist in self-debugging. So let's proceed on to the slide number 3. So before going into in-depth about specifics of each adapter, we'd like to take some time to cover some of the general debugging information that's needed for debugging or troubleshooting adapter issues in general. So whenever, for say, you're running into some issue with adapters and you wanted to approach support, these are some of the information that we look out for if this information is provided for us at the first hand, this will greatly help us reduce the resolution time. So the first one is basically we look out for is the version info. So version info of the adapter, the runtime, and the toolkit, etc. So for the version info of the adapter, there are multiple ways for finding that out. One way is from the toolkit, going to either the external service wizard in RAID or the rational application developer or the adapter connection wizard in the message broker. And in order to find out the version info for runtime issues, basically we'll have to go to the runtime and open the RAR file either with a WinZip or any extraction utility and then look up the manifest.mf file. So that basically contains the version info of the adapter. So the next one we look out for is the project interchange. So this basically gives us information about the flow or the application. And one thing to note out here when providing the project interchange is basically make sure to include the adapter RAR file as well, because that's the only way we'll be able to look at the configuration properties of the adapters. So that's one thing we generally see that it's greatly helpful if we include that RAR file. Once the project information, the next one is for the build time issues. we need the metadata discovery.log file. So this log file is available in the workspace directory. So the trace scan for build time issues can be enabled in the wizard itself. You can basically set the trace level and the trace level and the path for the thing as well. So this log file would help us debug the build time issues. And for the runtime issues, focusing on process server and application server, the system out or the trace logs will be helpful. And with the trace level set to com.ibm.j2ca.star equals to all, sometimes com.ibm.j2ca.star equals to finest, setting the traces to finest will be helpful if we need the API level information. So the trace logs are something which will help us look at the flow on like on the adapter method calls and also the stack trace and everything. So that's with the process server and application server. And for the message broker, we need the service traces. So this steps to enable the debug mode and then collect the service traces. So with message broker, I would like to also mention that in addition to service traces, sometimes, especially with the data-related issues, it's greatly helpful to have the trace node as well. So that's great troubleshooting utility that we have. So basically, it's nothing but a node. So what happens? So for example, let's take a flow for where we have a where an IDOC, for example, with SAP Adapter, it's sent from SAP, and we have a message flow. For example, the MQ input node, and there is an SAP input node, there is a compute node, and there is an MQ output node. And somewhere down the flow, at the end of the flow, what we see is that the data is not what we expected or what was sent off. So in order to figure out or debug where things went wrong, so generally by having this trace nodes at different points in the flow and setting it to root level, so that would print out the entire message tree. And in that way, we can isolate where the problem is, and that would greatly help us in debugging. So let's move on to this. Basically covers the general information that we look out for troubleshooting all the adapters. Now, let's move on to slide number 4. So in the next couple of slides, we'll talk about some of the specifics in case of troubleshooting with the SAP adapter issues. We firstly, we'll talk about some of the troubleshooting tips, and then we'll jump into some of the common issues and solutions that we generally come across with the SAP adapter. Let's move on to slide number 5. So in addition to the general traces that we need for the other, for all the adapters, RFC traces are greatly helpful in debugging SAP adapter issues. So basically these traces, they capture the information or the data that flows between SAP and the adapter application. For example, recently we've seen an issue where there was a flow where basically a request was being sent from adapters to the SAP. An IDOC was being sent, and when the IDOC was received at the SAP end, we saw that the IDOC, the data was seen to be truncated. So in order to figure out in such scenarios, right, so in order to figure out where the issue is, enabling this RFC traces and combination with the adapter traces would help us figure out, like, where the issue is. So once we see that, okay, in the adapter traces, the data is being sent through fine, then we look at the RFC traces and see if the data is if the data that's coming out of the adapter is as expected. So if we see that, for instance, if the data is as expected, then we basically isolate the problem to the SAP end. So that's how the RFC traces are helpful. There are multiple ways of enabling the RFC traces. One is basically you can enable it during development time by setting the RFC trace level and RFC trace path. The possible values as mentioned here were 1 through 8 and the RFC trace path. And this can also be enabled at the JVM level or also on the server level. So for message broker, this can be MQSI create configurable services can be used to enable the RFC traces. One other thing that I want to mention about the RFC traces are once we turn this trace on, there are like two different types of RFC traces. One of the files that basically starts with a starts with the letters JCO. So basically those things, those files are called the SIPIC traces. They are basically generated at the directory level, whatever you specify in RFC trace path. But there are other files called RFC traces. That those files, they get generated in the, for example, in process server, they get generated at the root level or the root directory, profile root directory. So those are the files. I mean, in case if you want those files also to be redirected to a certain directory, there is this environment variable called rfc_trace_dir that needs to be set and where you can specify the directory location so that even those files get directed to specific directory. So this will actually ease up on finding all the RFC trace files that are needed for debugging. There are actually, one other point to mention here is these RFC traces are not adapter traces, but are in fact the SAP traces, but it's just, so since there are SAP traces, they can either be enabled on the application end as well, meaning the SAP end. So adapter just basically provides another way where we can enable or trigger that flag to enable the RFC traces, but can be enabled on the SAP end as well. Now, moving on to slide number 6. So in this slide, I basically want to cover some of the useful SAP transaction codes, T codes, transaction codes that we come across for the ALE and the BAPI modules, which are the most which are the modules around which we see most of the issues. So for the ALE module, the SM59 is basically where we do a connection test or an RFC connection test. So to explain a little bit more on that, this is especially used for inbound adapter, for debugging inbound SAP adapter issues. For example, let's say we deploy a flow or an application that contains the SAP input node or the export. So once we deploy that, what we would see is like we'll go to this transaction code. Since the SAP adapter inbound, we have configured it to listen on a particular RFC program ID. So we go to this particular transaction code, select the RFC program ID for which we have configured our adapter to listen to, and then run a test connection. So if the adapter is running fine and if it's listening, if there are no issues, the connection test comes out as successful. So that basically shows us that our adapter is up and running and helps us verify that the connection has been established to SAP. The next transaction code is WE20, which is basically the partner profile information. So this, in this transaction code, what we can see is like the message type, message code, and all the information pertaining to the IDOC. So this is useful when configuring or for the inbound IDOCs or also basically for the outbound. So to make sure like what are the message type, what are the message codes associated with a particular IDOC. And next one is WE02. Basically, this particular transaction code, one can look at the IDOCs that are sent in and that came out of SAP. So this IDOC shows the status of the IDOCs as well. So the status generally shows, if it's successful, it shows with a green status. Otherwise, it's in red. And also, once you select that particular IDOC, you'll also be able to see the reason or the cause of the error within that for the failure as well. The next one is SN58, asynchronous RFC error log. So this log, sometimes we have seen issues basically around, say that IDOC has been sent out from SAP, but the adapter never received it. So first thing we do is basically we'll have to go to this SN58 transaction code and check if there are any entries in there. So if there are any entries, like, for example, putting on to the if at the TRFC level, this transaction would basically capture that information. So only if there is no entries in that, that's when it means that the event or basically the IDOC has actually exited out of SAP. Even though it shows successful in WE02, SN58 is actually the transaction that confirms that the event has left out of SAP. So like for TRFC, which we use SN58, if you are using QRFC, we go with SNQ1, which basically provides the error information or the logging for if you are using QRFC queues. The next one is WA60 or 62. So this basically, these two transactions provide the IDOC schema and also the IDOC document schema documentation. So for the adapter, basically the way it builds its business objects is it introspects the IDOC schema and builds a business object out of it. So in order to make sure that the IDOC is generating all the segments or, I mean, business object for all the segments within IDOC, this is the right place to go and check for the segments that are there in here and compare them with the adapter artifacts that were generated on the generated once we run the wizard and on the WebSphere end. So these are some of the transaction codes that are really helpful when working with the ALE module. And for the BAPI module, we have SE37, which is basically used to display the BAPI information. So one other point that I would like to mention here is about the ABAP debug. In case of BAPIs, if there are any issues with running the function modules, there is this flag called ABAP debug. So this particular word, ABAP debug is equal to true, can be set to true on the adapter end. But in order to debug the adapter, debug the function module. The other way to do it is like go to this transaction and we can also set the breakpoints at the desired lines or at the desired points in the code or in the function module, start the debugging on the SAP end as well. So setting ABAP debug equals to 2 has the equivalent effect of setting the debug and the breakpoints within SAP as well. So that's basically about the SE37, and we can also verify if the BAPI can be executed successfully within SAP as well by going through this transaction code. Now moving on to slide number 7. Now that we have covered some of the troubleshooting information, I'd like to start with in the next couple of slides, we'd like to discuss some of the commonly reported scenarios that we've been seeing with the SAP adapter. So one such error is basically what we see is service SAP GW00 unknown. So this happens especially with version 7 of the adapters and only with the SAP input node or SAP export in the inbound scenario. Once the adapter is deployed, the application shows as started, but when you go into SN59 and do a connection test, the connection test would come as negative, showing that the adapter is not connected to SAP. And if you go to the JCO traces or if you look into the logs, you would basically see this error message saying that the service unknown. So this basically happens because the entry, the service, the SAP gateway service is not known to the host where the adapter resides. And in order to correct this or overcome this error, what we need is to basically add an entry, something like as shown in the slide, SAP GW00 and 3300/TCP. So adding this entry, we need to add this particular entry in the ETC services file, and it's basically applicable to both Windows as well as the Unix systems. And so depending upon the gateway service being used, the port number changes as well. And also one thing to make sure is before making the entry is to make sure that particular port is available. And I guess the system administrators will be able to help detect any port conflicts as well. One other thing to mention here is for Windows system, make sure once you make this entry, there is an empty line after this. After the last entry, because if there is no empty line, in Windows there's a tendency to ignore the last line. So just make sure to add an additional line at the end so that this entry takes into effect. Now moving on to slide number 2. So slide number 2. In this slide, discuss about one of the other common scenario. So what happens is like we in the J-code races when executing either the BAPI or the ALE, we run into this particular error saying that a max number of 100 conversations exceeded and the connection basically is lost. So this has been identified to a known SAP issue and it's described in the SAP note. And the way to get around this is basically setting the environment variable CPIC_max_con to a value greater than 100. So this particular variable has to be set both on the SAP server machine and also on the server where the adapter resides. So they directed it. So by setting this variable, this is just a workaround, but this, by setting this variable to a value greater than 100, we can overcome this particular issue. Line number 9. The next scenario is like, basically, this is one of the other common problems that we have seen at runtime as well. So one of the scenarios where this particular error occurs is like, say, for example, we have a BAPI call, and so we make a BAPI call, that the first BAPI call works fine, and whereas we have another BAPI call. So from the second BAPI call, when we try to make a call, so that particular call fails with this error saying that the session reference is null. So this happened in one other scenario where the BAPI call was executed successfully, but there were certain idle time. So after that, whenever a BAPI request came in, all the requests started to fail. So in those scenarios, we are seeing this particular error. So this is basically a known issue that was identified, and that was fixed in the APAR mentioned in the slide 37273. So in order to get this fixed, you can always contact support, and we can provide an interim fix for this particular issue. So the reason why this error was happening was basically whenever there was this JCO timeout checker thread, which was basically kicking in and which was trying to clean out, destroy the connection. And once it destroys the connection, the state was basically changed from stateful to stateless. So once the state was changed, and none of the commits were working, and none of the function calls were going through, even though not much errors were being thrown, and no clear indication of errors were seen in the logs as well. So this was because of the JCO timeout checker thread. So the fix was included to make sure that the checker thread doesn't kick in, and the state was still remained as stateful and not being made to stateless at that point to recover from this issue. So that's about the scenario 3. And now moving on to slide number 10. In this slide, I would like to cover, so recently we've seen a number of issues around the SAP load balancing environment. So talking about load balancing, in case of outbound scenario or the request processing, there's not much to be done from the adapter end, because all the adapter does is basically send the request to a message server, and the message server takes care of the load balancing and everything on the SAP end. But in case of inbound, we've seen a number of issues around when trying to connect to a load balancing environment, like, for example, saying that connecting to the message server host failed and not it being able to connect to the application servers and stuff. So for SAP load balancing environment, in order to connect to it during the inbound scenario, there are a couple of things we need to take care of. So first thing is make sure that all the configuration properties in the adapter are set, like the application server host, the logon group, the message server host, the gateway host, gateway service, etc. So once these are specified, so the way the adapter works in the inbound inbound to connect to an SAP load balancing environment is it basically executes this function module called th_server_list. So once it executes that function module, it returns a list of the servers or the application servers registered with that particular logon group. And that's the way it gets the information about the application servers registered with the logon group. And sometimes in certain of SAP systems, what happens is like basically this th_server_list, it has these two structures called list_IPv6. So these are the structures which actually return the host name or the address of the application servers that are registered with the logon group. So sometimes in older SAP systems, this particular structure, the list_IPv6, was not included. So in that scenario, what it does is the adapter then goes to or resorts to the another function module called RZLITAB. So it basically executes that module, queries that to get the IP addresses. And another thing to make sure on the SAP end is basically the IP address, the host address is returned, or for the application server, make sure it's in the quad dot format. So So that make sure it's not and not in the hexadecimal format to make that's the way the adapter expects it to be on the SAP, and otherwise we'd run into issues like not being able to connect to the message server host or not being able to determine the IP addresses of the application servers. So once we verify the load balancing configuration on the SAP side is correct, the next step is basically also, like we added the SAP gateway information to the ETC services file, we need to also add the message server ports information to the ETC services file as well. So these are a couple of configuration steps that we need to take care of during inbound scenario when connecting to a load balancing environment. Now moving on to slide number 11. Another scenario that we came across is basically when concurrent requests are sent to SAP adapter. For example, say we have a message flow which executes a BAPI. So, and we have when we deployed another message flow which executes another BAPI, say BAPI 1 and BAPI 2. So until the first message flow is there, I mean it works fine. But after the second message flow is deployed, intermittently, we were seeing this particular error called the JCO error concurrent call. This error was caused because of there was some conflict in trying to use the resource or in an attempt to obtain the resource. So this error has been identified and actually the adapter code has been fixed for it. So in case if you run into issue, please contact support and we'll be able to provide an interim fix for this particular issue. So at this point, actually, I'm done with the troubleshooting SAP adapter issues, and to proceed further, I'd like to transfer it to Damo.
Thank you, Pony. That's a great stuff on the SAP adapter. Could we move on to next slide, please? Okay. So let's see some of the troubleshooting guides and information for Siebel adapter. Before moving into the scenarios, the commonly experienced scenarios, Pawani covered some of the general debug information in the beginning of her presentation. That will applicable for all of the adapters. So providing system out log and adapter trace files would be a great information for the support to investigate the issues. Let's move on to next slide to see some of the common scenarios reported in Siebel adapter. So the first scenario, before I move into the scenarios, I just wanted to tell what are the additional information specific to Siebel adapter that would help the support team or even for troubleshooting. From the Siebel application, there are application logs like server logs, object manager logs. Those would help a lot of times what is happening at the Siebel application end. Those informations are very helpful in case the problem is at the application end. The Siebel administrator or the Siebel application development team would be able to find out the error messages and fix the issues before going into the adapter logs. One of the other helpful way is testing the same scenario. For example, if you are doing a create scenario which is failing, then it is better to test it using the UI, that is Siebel application, with the same user ID password that used by the adapter. So that would eliminate if there are any privilege or access issues. One other thing before I move into the scenario, the ISA data collector, which will be a very helpful tool for any of the adapters, any of the applications that the IBM provides, you could use that one to collect the data and send it to the IBM. There are two versions. One is ISA Lite, and that is a very lighter version, which simply captures the information, and the ISA Workbench, the second version, which installs a workbench at the server and collects the information and send it to IBM support. This is also very helpful for troubleshooting. Okay, without further ado, let's move on to the scenario one. So one of the scenarios we often see is the adapter does not retry connecting to the application after the application goes down or there is some disconnect. The main reason for this behavior is there is a property stop polling on error, which will be true. So that tells the adapter stop polling when there is an exception. So if you don't want this scenario to happen, whenever the adapter application comes back, you want it to reconnect, then set the property to false. So the adapter will keep trying and will connect it. So let's see the next scenario. Moving on to the next slide, slide 14. So this is a very similar but not exactly same. Another properties like when the adapter does not reconnect to the application when there is a disconnect. So these are other properties, the retry interval and the retry limit needs to be set. A lot of times there will be a prop value set in the retry limit. So adapter would keep on retrying to connect to the application until the number specified. In case you want to go infinitely, so whenever the application comes back and to connect, then set the default value to zero. That's the default value. So then it will keep on retrying until the application comes up. The retry interval, it is specified in milliseconds, so set it according to the business need. Let's move on to next slide, slide 15. One of the common behavior when retrieve all operation was used, a lot of times it goes into the return data will be huge and there will be an out-of-memory exception thrown in the log. So the suggestion is to set a larger heap size. So you could set these values at the JVM level. So moving on to the next slide, slide 16. So a lot of times the adapter throws exception saying fail to populate return BBO because of some essential fields are missing. There are some fields which are required for the Siebel application, which may not be a required field for business or for the integration. So the good idea is to check with the Siebel application team which are the required fields. So during the discovery time, artifact generation time, or when you're running the EMD, you could select those fields as well. So in that case, it will have all the required fields for the application as well for the business need. Let's see the next scenario. Moving on to the next slide. So this scenario, in both the cases, inbound and outbound, the adapter would throw an exception saying it reached end of file. So a lot of times in the business environment, customers will be using multiple versions of Siebel application, or otherwise they will be migrating from one Siebel version to another Siebel version. There are files, the dependency files, which are Siebel data bin drivers. For example, Siebel.jar, Siebel.ji_enu.jar. Those does not have a backward compatibility. So due to that, when we use the incorrect version, it throws an exception saying it reached end of the file. So the suggestion is use the right version of the driver files so you won't see this exception. Let's see next scenario, moving on to slide 18. So connection timeout. This is one of the common scenarios. This will be caused by the timeout setting for the physical connection not matching to the timeout for the managed connection setting. So how to resolve it? Set always the managed connection timeout value smaller than the physical connection timeout. So for example, the application will have a timeout setting. Make sure the managed connection setting, which used by the adapter, is always lesser. And there is a technode also available for this information. You could take a look at this URL in the presentation. Moving on to the next slide. Okay, so class not found exception during the runtime on the remote WAS. What happened is with the remote WAS server, the dependency jar files, the class path is different for the EMD and the runtime. So the suggestion is to modify the path of the shared libraries on the remote server in the admin console of the application for the particular application. So these are some of the common scenarios experienced with the Siebel adapter. Let's move on to the next slide. Let's look into some of the common scenarios that we have seen with the PeopleSoft adapter. So before going into the scenarios, once again, with the PeopleSoft adapter, in addition to the general debug information, the log and trace files, the additional information from the application logs, which is also called the Tuxedo logs, will be very helpful to see if there is an issue at the PeopleSoft application end. A lot of times that would help fix the issues which are due to the either API or some configuration at the PeopleSoft application. There is also a tool, CA Tester, provided by the PeopleSoft. So whatever the operation or the function we are achieving through the adapter could be also tested using the CA Tester. When the CA Tester, testing with the CA Tester, if it fails, then for sure it will not work with the Siebel adapter. So it is a great tool to fix the problem before testing it with the adapter. Let's look into some of the common scenarios. Move on to the next slide, slide 21. So the successfully processed events in the event table will not be removed. It will be still existing in the event table. So it's a design. So the adapter will not delete those events after processing successful, but it changes the status to 4 for all the processed events. So you could safely remove them. But those events will not be processed again. So let's see the next scenario. Let's move on to slide 22. Okay. So a lot of times the adapter could not process the inbound operation if the system locale is non-English, for example, if it's Chinese or Hebrew. The reason for this behavior is the date format property. So to resolve this issue, specify the date format property in the activation spec to the English format, which is month, date, year, hours, and minute. There's a tech note details this information. So the cause for this issue is the PeopleSoft server and the adapter work stays on the non-English environment. The date value that PeopleSoft API returns is in English local format, which is specified above. But the adapter expects the it's in the local format. That's why the issue, the conflict. So when you set this property, it will be taken care. Let's see the next scenario. Let's move on to slide 23. Okay. The effective sequence and the effective date are some of the terminologies and the properties of PeopleSoft application. So how to ignore the effective sequence number when you're inserting a child data? If you want to insert some value to be the, you know, oldest effective date to the current effective date, how to change that one? So there is a ASI could specify at the business object level, which is ignore effective sequence. When you set this property, you could make the record to be populated either as a lowest index or the current that is highest index. The child BO either sets this. There are another properties at the child BO level, which is INS at INS at current effective POS position or INS insert at oldest effective date position. Those are ASIs to set at the child BO level. So let's move on to the next scenario, slide 24. Okay, this is one of the very common scenarios that we have seen. Cannot connect, adapter cannot connect to the people tools version 8.4.9 when using people tools version 8.4.8, the PeopleSoft JOA jar, which is the file used to connect to the adapter users to connect to the PeopleSoft application. So, the very key thing with the PeopleSoft adapter is it requires the same version of the people tools version of the PSJOA jar. So make sure you're using the right one. Otherwise, there will be a connection issue, or it won't connect, talk to the PeopleSoft application. Let's move to next slide, slide 25. So these are some of the common scenarios we saw so far with the PeopleSoft adapters. Let's move on to the JDE adapters. In addition to the debug information, it would be helpful to have the JDE application log to find out any application-related information. In addition to that, there is a JDE connector sample tool, which are provided by the vendor, that helps to test the scenario before we put the scenario into the adapter to make sure that scenario works. So it's a great tool. We should take advantage of it. Let's quickly go on to the next scenarios. Let's move on to slide 26. Thank you. So scenario one, the batch execution of the JDE business functions. It's a common terminology. Everyone knows the begin doc, edit line, and end doc. So to execute these ones in the batch process, in the batch mode, it's good to set the reference ASI, which will help the business function which are in the batch could be executed on the same JDE kernel. There is also a tech note available with the details. So to give a little further details on this one, if you set the reference ASI attribute for MN transaction ID, for example, F4311 edit line and F4311 end doc, so this helps to get the MN transaction ID value from the execution result of F4311 FS begin doc. Then the purchase order record will be generated properly in the JD AdWords server. So the TechNode provides great details of this scenario. I would suggest to refer that one. Let's move on to the next slide, slide 27. Invalid table type. So there will be error thrown invalid table type when a lot of times the user selects the table which are in the XML list of EMD. The reason is the BO name is only valid for a few of the table types which are given here. OW table, OW view, foreign underscore table, and table underscore conversion. Select right table so to get rid of this exception, invalid table type. Let's move on to the next slide. Slide 28, thank you. Unable to retrieve table column info. So this is mainly happens due to the table name. So make sure the table name is correct and the table name is really defined in the JDE server. Let's move on to the next slide to see the next scenario. Slide 29. So no RTE listed in the EMD phase. The EMD inbound connection is working, but there is no expected RTE listed in the EMD metadata tree. So how to fix this? Verify the JDE transaction server is running. That's the one the adapter uses to get the event table. And verify that there is an event type defined in the JDE server. Also, verify that the subscriber and the subscription to the event are defined. Use the JDE connector sample tool, which we talked in the beginning, which are provided by the vendor, to make sure the RTE mechanism works well. Let's move on to the next slide. This is scenario 5, slide 30. Okay, fail to establish event manager. At the inbound scenario, inbound runtime, when the RTE is received, sometimes the exception thrown, SPI com exception, and show as shown in the stack trace here. The reason is the configuration is invalid or the transaction server does not work. So the suggestion is make sure the configuration of the events in JDE interop INI is correct and verify the transaction server is installed and also it is started. Again, use the JDE connector sample tool to make sure this works well. Let's move on to the next slide. Invalid username or password. There is an exception, spec failure exception, thrown during the discovery time, the EMD, or even at the runtime in the log file. So here's a stack trace shown here, invalid username and password. The main reason is, I mean, it's very obvious the username and password, either of one or both of them are invalid or incorrect. So when you're running the EMD, make sure you're specifying the valid values and the right values for the username and password attributes. Also, in the runtime, verify that the JDBJINI, which has the right username password under the JDBJ bootstrap session. And also make sure the import or export files are generated with the right username and password. Let's quickly move on to the next slide. slide 32. So error when retrieving business function metadata in the EMD. So this, what happens is the EMD tree view under the business function metadata is shown, but there is an exception, specific failure exception is thrown when extending that business function node. So the cause for this exception is the driver version is either not correct or the business function is not deployed correctly onto the JDE server. Make sure the driver jars are latest version and compatible to the JDE server. And also the business function object is deployed correctly onto the JDE server. So these are some of the scenarios. So far we talked on the SAP, Siebel, PeopleSoft, and JDE adapters. Let's move on to the next slide. Here are some additional useful links for the troubleshooting and also the presentations.
Thank you, Tanmu, and Bradley, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the lines for questions.
We have no questions.
Thank you, Jackie. And at this time, we will conclude the presentation.